Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and in the early hours of Saturday, the 4th of April, these are our main stories. The head of the IMF says the coronavirus pandemic has created an economic crisis like no other. How the tiny mountain state of Andorra copes with the outbreak, and the efforts by the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church to stop the spread of the virus in Moscow. Also in this podcast, how Greek filmmakers do their bit to keep spirits up during lockdown.
Art can be made in any situation as long as there is an artist and an audience. Our part is to implement creation, give the means to this hope.
And the cross-border love story in the time of coronavirus. But first, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund has said that a $1 trillion war chest has been made available to protect the global economy from the effects of the pandemic. Speaking at a World Health Organization briefing in Geneva, Kristalina Georgieva said vulnerable economies were most at risk and over 90 countries had made requests for emergency finance. Via video link, she called on countries around the world to work together to tackle the pandemic.
This is a crisis like no other. Never in the history of the IMF we have witnessed the world economy coming to a standstill. We are now in recession. It is way worse than the global financial crisis. And it is a crisis that requires all of us to come together.
Well, President Trump has also been speaking at his coronavirus task force briefing at the White House on Friday evening.
The CDC is advising the use of non-medical cloth face covering as an additional voluntary public health measure. So it's voluntary. You don't have to do it. They suggest it for a period of time, but this is voluntary. I don't think I'm going to be doing it. The CDC is recommending that Americans wear a basic cloth or fabric mask that can be either purchased online or simply made at home, probably material that you'd have at home. These face coverings can be easily washed or reused. I want to emphasize that the CDC is not recommending the use of medical grade or surgical grade masks, and we want that to be used for our great medical people that are working so hard and doing some job.
There certainly seem to be some pretty mixed messages in that. I asked our correspondent in Washington, Aling McBool, if people will be confused.
Well, critics would say that that has been the problem with these White House briefings from the beginning. On one hand, the president saying one thing and yet doing another. When we talk about social distancing, every day on that briefing platform, Donald Trump stands with a task force team within the safe zone that you're supposed to have. But yes, this has been a debate, of course, that's been had in countries right across the world as to whether to advise whether masks should be used or not. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, at one stage was saying it didn't want people to wear masks because that would make people feel safer than they really were. They potentially wouldn't pay as much attention to social distancing. They might touch their face through adjusting the mask all the time. And now they have decided that because they say there is more evidence that those who are asymptomatic, so who don't show any symptoms, still carry the virus and can still spread the virus, that's why they are advising people to wear these cloth masks. But as you heard there, in almost the same sentence that Donald Trump was saying that, he said that he wouldn't be doing it himself. He expanded on that by saying that it was because he felt good.
We're also perhaps hearing that there's a bit of disagreement within the White House, the advisers, who are pushing the president to order a sort of nationwide stay-at-home order, not just the states choosing to do it individually. What more do we know about that?
Yes, again there, Donald Trump has so far resisted any kind of measures that are imposed on any states. Coming from the White House, he has laid out recommendations, but as you rightly say, left it to states to decide for themselves. But the senior advisors, disease prevention, have been saying publicly that they feel it is time for those kind of orders, because there are some states in this country, five states, which have no sort of isolation measures or recommendations in place at all, no stay-at-home orders in place at all, and seven other states where there are only partial measures and still allow, for example, church services to go ahead. So it is getting to the stage. We've got more than 250,000 cases here in America, so there are those medical experts who are saying now is the time for the White House to go further.
Ali McBall in Washington. Spain is fighting one of the biggest coronavirus outbreaks in the world. The tiny principality of Andorra, meanwhile, nestled between Spain and France in the Pyrenees Mountains, is so far faring better, but it has just one hospital to cope. Xavier Espot is Andorra's prime minister.
The whole population of our country, about 77,000 inhabitants, will be tested for coronavirus antibodies so we can evaluate how high the COVID-19 infection rate really is. This measure has to help us in taking the decision of which social and economic activities could reopen, always being extremely precautious and basing all decisions only on scientific and health criteria.
I asked our reporter Sara Canals in Spain what a small country like Andorra can do to help stop the spread of the virus.
Well, just like the rest of the world, Andorra has also been hit by the pandemic, and there is concern across the country. The first case was registered about a month ago. A lockdown was implemented 3 weeks ago, one day before Spain, with people only allowed to leave home to buy basic needs and only essential services functioning. As for now, 439 people have been infected and 16 have died. And overall, the challenges that Andorra is facing are similar to the ones that we've seen across Europe. An overload in patients, healthcare workers infected with coronavirus, or nursing homes being hardly hit by the virus. Now, the healthcare coverage is generally very good, but there is only one hospital, as you mentioned, and with Spain and France's health systems on the brink of collapse, Andorra had to seek help somewhere else to avoid a potential collapse. In this regard, the country has welcomed a group of 39 Cuban doctors and nurses, becoming the second country in Europe after Italy to accept medical help from Cuba. They are now under quarantine, as one of them tested positive for the virus, unfortunately, but they are expected to start working by next week. And on top of that, the government has also announced that in 2 weeks, the entire population will be tested thanks to a purchase of 150,000 tests to South Korea, an amount actually that equals twice the Andorran population. Now, this is a very unprecedented and groundbreaking initiative, as the strategy will allow the administration to know who has and who has not been infected with COVID-19. And it will allow also people to gradually return to work and to get back to normal life.
That was Sara Canals. The head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, has circled Moscow's Ring Road to pray for the city's deliverance from coronavirus. Russia has more than 4,000 confirmed cases. From Moscow, here's Steve Rosenberg.
This may seem an unorthodox way to battle a pandemic, but the Russian patriarch claims that the icon he has with him in his car has miraculous powers. The head of the Russian church is being driven around the Moscow Ring Road, and as he goes around, he's saying prayers and calling on help from above to protect the city from COVID-19. In recent days, outside the capital, Russian priests have been taking to the skies, flying around their cities to pray for deliverance from the deadly virus.
Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. China was, of course, the first country to have to deal with the coronavirus, and it's now using that experience to try to help others. Beijing has sent doctors and medical equipment to about 100 different countries. It's been praised for its willingness to provide that assistance. But some suspect China's leaders are also using the global pandemic as a propaganda tool to promote their country. Michael Bristow reports.
Overlaid with stirring music, this Chinese TV report shows doctors and medical supplies arriving in Italy from China. Beijing's been sending medics abroad to help others fight the coronavirus for some time. These arriving Chinese doctors are replacing colleagues who'd already been in Italy for 2 weeks.
Well, Serbia is preparing to attack the COVID-19 disease with massive testing and strict isolation measures. The ones who are attributed to this new strategy are doctors who were sent recently by China.
The Serbian president launched a scathing attack on his country's neighbours in the European Union for their lack of help.
I know that in some places here in Italy they're trying to study the immune response to the virus.
China's finding different ways to offer assistance. Here, an Italian doctor is using a video link to get advice from a Chinese counterpart in China. Beijing has not just been sending abroad doctors, testing kits and protective suits. It's also sharing its experience in fighting the virus.
They generally felt they have some kind of credibilities and experience they could share with the rest of the world.
This is Dr. Yu Jie from the British think tank Chatham House. As well as a genuine willingness to help, she thinks China also sees an opportunity to lead the world, as the United States has done in the past.
United States, to be frank, has not really shown much leadership when it comes to combating global pandemic, and therefore China felt it is perhaps the right moment, the watershed moment, for China of participating, leading this entire effort of helping other countries.
China has certainly not been shy in letting the world know it's offering its support. This foreign ministry spokesman is listing some of the ways Beijing is assisting the world. But is it helping its friends first? This is another official talking about China's virus aid to Pakistan, a long-term ally. Here's Dr. Yu Jie again.
They were only sending equipments according to what kind of relationship they have with that respective country. Some countries, they have sending tons of stuff, and some countries, and they obviously have offered nominal support.
Half a million face masks being loaded onto a plane in China, bound for Spain. They've been donated by Jack Ma, one of China's richest men. The epidemic might offer a propaganda opportunity for China's government, but it's clear Chinese people are genuinely eager to help.
We heard a lot from China about how serious this virus was. So when really the coronavirus outbreak happened first...
This is Will Zhuang, a Chinese expat living in the city of York in Britain. He helped organise a fundraising campaign among the Chinese community in the city, which raised nearly $10,000 for the local hospital.
And turning to Wuhan now, public transport in the city was shut down when it was the epicenter of the COVID-19 epidemic. But that's changing, and more services were restored on Sunday.
In Wuhan, the Chinese city where the virus was first detected, life is slowly returning to normal. China's been praised for sharing its experiences fighting the outbreak in this city. But will that goodwill fade as deaths abroad continue to soar? And people remember that China is where it all started.
Michael Bristow. Still to come on this podcast, how ghost football matches make hundreds of thousands of dollars for fraudsters in Ukraine. As more and more countries introduce emergency measures in a bid to control the pandemic, human rights groups are warning that some of these measures could be used not to save lives, but to crack down on political opposition. The United Nations Human Rights Office has told governments emergency measures must be proportionate, non-discriminatory and temporary. Imogen Folks sent this report from Geneva.
We call on all countries to attack the virus.
For weeks, the World Health Organization has urged governments to take radical action against the coronavirus.
Aggressive measures to find, isolate, test, treat and trace.
Of course, everyone wants to see it defeated. Billions of people are now living largely without complaint under lockdown. But human rights activists fear some governments may abuse the goodwill of their citizens. Peggy Hicks is director of the Right to Development at the UN's Human Rights Office.
We are very concerned about the potential opportunistic use of a public health emergency to accomplish other ends that may not at all be necessary to addressing the pandemic, directed against opposition or disfavored groups in some way, civil society. We're certainly concerned about that prospect.
The UN points to Hungary's sweeping emergency powers, allowing the government to imprison anyone who spreads what it deems to be false information, or India's sudden lockdown, which could plunge millions of internal migrants into poverty. Kenneth Roth, Executive Director of Human Rights Watch, says the measures taken by governments must be temporary.
When people are afraid, they tend to accept governmental overreach. We saw this after the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks, where people were terrified. They asked governments to protect them. And many governments took advantage of that situation to adopt steps that went well beyond what was necessary, and indeed, in some cases, maintained these powers, and it was very difficult to roll them back.
But what if governments don't relinquish their new powers when the pandemic is over? Then human rights groups say it's up to us, the billions currently sitting patiently at home, to remind our leaders that a return to normal means a return to human rights standards as well.
Imogen Folks in Geneva. Around the world, countries have imposed movement restrictions on their citizens to try to reduce the spread of the pandemic. Many governments have given police new powers to enforce lockdowns. And in Tunisia, the authorities are now using robots to scour the streets for rule breakers. Our North Africa correspondent Rana Jawad has more details.
Well, the machines are called P-Guards, according to their makers, and they were originally produced by a Tunisian robotics company that's based here. They were designed as surveillance machines, and the company tells me that their clients used to be private security firms. But with the COVID-19 lockdown, we've seen a surge in improvised, if you will, or trials to enforce the rules limiting freedom of movement. And so last week, the Tunisian Ministry of Interior decided to use these robots to do it. We don't know how many are in use, but it seems quite limited in scope and quite small in numbers.
Well, the Interior Ministry has posted a video of this device approaching people in the street. Let's take a listen to it. So Rana, the video shows this device, I suppose the side of a very small car, approaching somebody in the street. What do we hear there?
Well, what you're hearing is basically someone in a command center that's looking through the lens. The machine itself is mounted with a camera. And so it's autonomous in that it can move around. It's got a built-in GPS and map. But then once they spot someone, whoever's monitoring it at the other end at headquarters, then they can question that person. And that's what happened in that clip you just played. They were asking him at some point towards the end, you know, why are you here and show your papers.
And the people I saw in that video seemed to sort of be quite respectful, sort of stick around and listen to what was being said to them. How are people in general responding to it?
I think what we've seen in some of the videos posted, whether by the authorities themselves or some independent ones, it would appear, they're still quite surprised by it. This is not a usual scene here. For the most part, the reaction has been one of backing, I suppose, or supporting Tunisian-made robots. Some people saying, well, we might come out by the end of this as a very futuristic country using tech. To a large extent, I think people don't mind having them around. There is a real worry here about the spread of COVID-19. We've heard from local health authorities that community infections are increasing. They have a total of 495 confirmed tested cases out of a total of 6,000.
That was Rana Jawad. Well, plenty of the more creative members of society are doing their bit to keep people amused and keep spirits up. Filmmakers in Greece, 10 of them, 10 directors, have been commissioned to make 3-minute films conveying the experience of being confined in their homes during the outbreak. Each had to shoot and edit the films themselves. The completed shorts were put online on Thursday by the Thessaloniki International Film Festival. Tom Brook reports.
The ominous sound of a foghorn can be heard in one of these short films, which each focus on life in confinement during the pandemic. The 10 shorts have just been completed, and they were made at the behest of the Thessaloniki Film Festival in Greece when it postponed its documentary festival last month. The festival's artistic director, Orestes Andriadakis, wants creativity to flourish in this time of darkness.
So the Thessaloniki International Film Festival believes that art can be made in any situation as long as there is an artist and an audience. Our part is to implement creation, give the means to this hope. So we're asking film directors to make a movie in their confinement. It is a liberating action because there is no borders within four walls. We're staying home, washing our hands properly, and making films without disinfectant.
Βγήκαν από τη θέση τους και μπερδεύτηκαν.
Among the films made for this endeavour in the past few days is Iglismos, shot within the home of director Mariana Economou. The camera pans across piles of books in her home.
When the Thessaloniki Festival assigned me with this little project, I decided to do it because at the time I was rearranging the books and the bookshelves in the house. By doing this, I was coming face to face with my past and my previous lives. So this little film, this 3-minute film, is about that. The experience of time, the fact that we are constantly in a rush, and suddenly we are forced to sit back and look at our lives, look at ourselves, and look at our role in this society and this world.
The short film Foghorn, defined by that sound, is an abstract work featuring wetlands and animals. It makes use of previously shot material. It comes from director Silas Soumerkos.
My film ended up about a pretty bleak atmosphere that is above the city, like Athens that suddenly is silent. In contrast to the happiness of animals that see the human action not being there anymore.
The man behind this collective creative endeavour, Orestes Andriadakis, was motivated by a desire to help the filmmaking community. But he also wants to give people hope and demonstrate that art can play a role in bringing that about.
We're strong and we're fighting. The last years, during this big economical crisis, particularly here in Greece, we questioned the role of the artist. And we say that is not important. And now billions of people, they are inside their homes consuming art. And so this is the fundamental of our society, of our existence.
The completed films will be shown on the Thessaloniki Film Festival's YouTube channel. The endeavour is just one of the many ways in which filmmakers and film festivals are responding to the pandemic, where the desire to be creative trumps the stress and anxiety that could be holding filmmakers back.
That report was by Tom Brook. Police in Ukraine are investigating how hundreds of thousands of dollars were gambled on football matches that never took place. Known as ghost games, they can be created by match fixers to try to fraudulently win money from bookmakers. Nigel Adley explains.
With so many sporting events cancelled or postponed due to COVID-19, there is very little for sports betting companies to offer those keen to gamble. So when it emerged that four lower league Ukrainian teams were holding a friendly tournament, many were keen to offer odds. Information about the games was supplied by a data company, and some bets in excess of $100,000 were placed on them. The only problem was the matches didn't happen. The information the data company was given by their representatives, supposedly at the tournament, was fictitious, and it suspected that match fixers, who knew exactly how the ghost games were going to play out, collected sizable winning bets before the fraud was uncovered. The Ukrainian Association of Football has been scathing over the lack of due diligence from the data company in a country where the sport is not currently permitted. Their response has been to claim that checks did take place and the matches were played, but they concede they were conducted in a fraudulent manner. The so-called tournament was advertised on a fake website and social media. And, at a time when the opportunities to gamble are so limited, that was clearly enough to convince the data company, the bookmakers and innocent gamblers that football had returned in Ukraine.
Nigel Adderley. We're going to end this Global News Pod with a love story for the coronavirus age. It involves a German man and a Danish woman, both in their 80s, whose romance and daily cross-border commute ran into problems. Now, Carsten Tixon Hansen and Inga Rasmussen keep their relationship alive with a daily meeting on camp chairs either side of the barricade. Paul Henley has been talking to the 89-year-old Carsten about the whole arrangement.
Love is stronger than anything. I'm widowed and my girlfriend is as well. We've been together for 2 years now. Since we've known each other, we've spent every night together at my place in Zudalugum. I would make breakfast in the morning and then she'd drive back home to Gallehus in Denmark, which isn't far from the border. But now the border is closed and we meet every day at the crossing. The bizarre thing is that it's just like 100 years ago. It was on the 14th of March, 1920, that a referendum decided to move the Danish-German border to where it is now. And exactly on the same day, 100 years later, they closed the border because of the corona crisis. And I'm stuck here, like my parents were in 1920, and can't go across to Denmark. Instead, my girlfriend and I now sit at the border crossing every day and chat for 2 hours. From 3 to 5 on weekdays, and at the weekend over lunchtime.
It sounds really difficult when you've spent so much time together.
Of course it's difficult. Because of this crisis, we can't hug each other, we can't kiss, and that hurts. But we can see each other. We laugh and we drink a punch made of tea and schnapps. That calms the nerves, gets us into a better mood, and everything feels a bit easier. We need each other.
And tell me, how do you get to the border every day, and how does your girlfriend get there?
I go by bike. I ride 60 kilometres every day, 30 in the morning and 30 in the afternoon. And Inga has a car.
How have other people reacted to this extraordinary friendship?
On the German side, they find it hard to believe. They say we're lucky to have each other. I'm a very loyal person. I was a good husband to my wife and looked after her for many years before she died. Now I'm sitting here all alone because the border is closed. But Inga always says that at least we can see each other for a few hours. We also call each other at least 3 times a day. I'd never thought that I could fall in love again like this, but there's nothing more beautiful than love.
Are you prepared to carry on with these daily meetings at the border ad infinitum? This situation might go on for weeks yet.
Yes, of course. It's what's keeping us going. And it doesn't matter how long this lockdown continues. We don't want to lose each other. Neither of us wants to go into a care home. We would like to support each other.
And rain, snow, nothing will stop you?
You're up, my sister, naturally.
Of course not. I will go there every day, whatever the weather. Yesterday, we had a storm that almost knocked me off my bike. But I kept riding, and there she was, already waiting in her car. She had brought cake and I brought the punch. There we were, at least 2 metres distance, of course, with the concrete barrier between us. We are inseparable.
89 years old and unstoppable by the sounds of things. That was Carsten Tixon Hansen speaking to Paul Henley. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Nick Miles, and until next time, goodbye.